Welcome to another episode of the WWE Podcast SmackDown Review, Aiden's Analysis, with, of course, Aid Willis. Now, there's not really much to say about the week in general, in terms of the lockdown, COVID-19, all of that. I just hope everyone's staying safe and staying as active as they can, keeping their mind, keeping their body healthy. Of course, if you follow me on Twitter or of social media in general, there's a lot of WWE talk, a lot of wrestling talk. We call it the wrestling community on Twitter. There's a big hashtag if you follow it. That's just a little bit of an escape from reality. It's good to keep up with the news. It's also to reach out to people that you wouldn't otherwise talk to, and obviously hear their views, their opinions, just a general debate, a general conversation about the ongoings, especially with WWE releasing some superstars recently, and obviously the ongoing situation with COVID-19 about where each event's taking place, like the Money in the Bank, pictures of the roof. The ring on the roof at the headquarters has been leaked. So it's just good to see that. If you follow me on Twitter, you'll see all the up-to-date news and regular conversations. And if you don't, then have a look. It's at Aid Wrestle. That's AID Wrestle. And I look forward to follow. Give me a tweet. Give me a DM. Give me a message. Whatever you want, I'll follow you back. And we'll just keep up to date. And that's a little escape from the ongoings of the world. So anyway, let's crack on with the SmackDown review from the 25th of April. I must start by saying it didn't actually look like the Performance Center to me. I don't know if they announced it or if they have, then I've completely missed it. But it just didn't look like the Performance Center for some reason. But it actually did look a little bit better, as there was no empty seats and they have all the lighting and the Tron screen setting the theme. So if that is the Performance Center, then for some reason my mind's gone blank and I've just completely messed up here. But if it is a new place or a different area inside the Performance Center, I loved it. I just thought it was much better. And the fact it just made the whole no fans thing, because there was no chance to have any fans there, just made it a little bit better for me. It just made it easier to watch. And I think Raw was the same, and some of the other events were the same recently. But I don't think I'd picked up on it until I'd actually watched this episode of SmackDown, because obviously I'm reviewing it, I analyse it. And it was just something I picked out. So I don't know if you feel the same. I thought it worked, and hopefully that continues until obviously this coronavirus thing is over, and then get back to the fans, get back to 20,000 fans, 10,000 fans, obviously pay-per-views, more WrestleMania with 100,000 fans, will be incredible. But for the time being, stick with this place, and it looks good. So the SmackDown show started off with the New Day with Kofi and Big E. They headed to the ring to start the show in a celebration for becoming the 8th time tag team champions. I just love their follow me, that repeat after me type taglines, which obviously would be better with a crowd. But Big E nicely mentioned that there's no one to repeat after me. That whole little dance they do, and that tag team champions, you know, all that stuff, and like New Day rocks and everything like that. The promos are just amazing from these two. And after seeing this, I don't actually know why I ever thought it was a little bit of a mistake to put the championship back on them. I think they're just complete assets to the company. And when they mentioned all the previous legendary tag teams, there is no doubt in my mind that the New Day belong on that mantra with them. And some people might listen to this and think, what is he talking about? The New Day are nowhere near like the Dudley Boys or stuff like that. For me, they are. I think in any generation, any era, the New Day would have been a top tag team like they are in this era. I'm not saying the silly sort of personas would have necessarily worked in the Attitude Era, but then a lot of their work and a lot of their creativity, it would have been adapted to the Attitude Era, a bit like some of the Attitude Era tag teams back then, a bit of the sort of like hard and sort of on edge stuff, it wouldn't work now. It's just the adaptions to each era, the PG era, obviously the Ruthless Aggression era. It's the different eras. It's just the fact that how well these tag teams work. So I do believe that New Day are definitely up there, and they should be held in that regard. So the Lucha House Party interrupts with some actual mic work, which for once wasn't too bad. Although short-lived, because Miz and Morrison interrupted with my exact prediction from last week, saying they won a singles match and moaning that the New Day haven't actually beat them in a legitimate tag match, which I wasn't actually too sure if that was a correct stat, but if that was true, then let's roll with it. The Lucha House Party interrupt with some random Mexican or Spanish or whatever it was that they were speaking. I'm not particularly good with my languages, which to me is just stupid. I mean, I hate when the Japanese stars speak their Japanese, and I hate when the Mexican stars speak Spanish or Mexican or Portuguese, whatever they speak. For me, if you can't speak it, then don't, or speak very little, because the majority of the fans, we can't understand it. So a little bit, like Rey Mysterio, for instance, speaks the majority of the time in English, and we can all understand it, and then adds a few little words in from Mexican or whatever language it is. But it works in that sense. Like, if he's going to speak a tiny bit of Spanish, then it just makes sense, as we can still understand exactly what he's saying. I don't get when Shinsuke or Asuka or now the Lucha House Party speak in their native languages and we can't understand it, and it's pretty much the majority of the time that's all they speak, and then they add a little bit of words that we can't understand. Where Dorado could actually speak English, so I don't know why they just didn't let him roll with the mic work. That would have been a lot better for me. The Forgotten Sons then disrupt the little tag team like get together, which is going on, and got into an argument with The Miz, and all three put on a good promo about their history of serving in the US military before it all erupted into a brawl. The numbers game got the better of the New Day, leaving them on the mat, and basically the Forgotten Sons standing over them. I was a little bit disappointed in the way that during this promo, WWE sort of let Lucha House Party drift out of any real relevance after they came out, as The Miz and Morrison had obvious reasons, and the Forgotten Sons even had their needed part to play, because obviously they're a new tag team and they're trying sort of like to push themselves into, I wouldn't say the title picture, just into more the roster, because at the moment they've had one match, one debut, so I wouldn't, although they're on the roster, it's not a name that would pop to my head if someone said, oh, what are the tag teams on SmackDown? So they're just trying to make themselves relevant and, like, well, not forgotten, I suppose. But the Lucha House Party obviously came out, and initially they challenged the New Day to their tag team titles. They spoke some good English, or Dorado did, and it just felt quite good. We hadn't seen that from Lucha House Party for a while. But as soon as Miz and Morrison came out, they just drifted, and then Forgotten Sons, they even drifted further back, and they didn't really say anything, and then they just didn't really need to be there. So for me, I think they could have done a little bit more with Lucha House Party in this sort of promo work. I'm excited to see how the Forgotten Sons are booked in the weeks or months to come, as the first look at the mic work looked confident, it looked strong, although obviously very, very scripted, and all three were good, which isn't always the case with tag teams, apart from the New Day and the Usos, where all members work very well on the mic. A perfect example, like literally right in front of our eyes in this promo, is The Miz and Morrison, where Miz is the sole spokesman. Morrison is pretty bad on the mic. But the Forgotten Sons actually sounded good. They look good. So it'll be interesting to see how the Forgotten Sons can get their real personalities across in some less rigid promos in the future, because in ring work they are solid and look to have a variety in their moveset, and also they all look big and they look sort of aggressive, and what's the word I'm looking for, they look like solid, they look like hard men, like military men, so their appearances look good, they look good together. I love some of their moves. I specifically like the tag team move off the top rope that they used, because I love when a tag team has that move that they work together with. I just feel like it could be an amazing tag team if booked correctly, because if they're going to use all three on the mic, which they have that now, and I don't know if they will in the future, each maybe just because they're new and they want to give everyone a chance, which has happened in the past with previous tag teams, or the fact that they all can speak, a bit like the New Day. Look, at all three of them can speak when Xavier Woods is in the mix. So you never know, Forgotten Sons could be a huge tag team, and the fact that they can all, like, they all look the part and all can hold their own, it could go on to huge, huge things. So it'd be quite exciting to see how they get booked. The next part of the show, Gulak enters the fold with... It was a little bit disappointing because he came out with Daniel Bryan, but he's using Daniel Bryan's theme, which again re-emphasises my point where he has just completely lost his own meaning and character, which they had so nicely built back before and around the Elimination Chamber. He's now just Daniel Bryan's little puppy, in effect. The Money in the Bank qualifying match with Baron Corbin started with Gulak being thrown over the top rope and Bryan sort of giving Drew a bit of a G up, like a bit of a sort of confidence boost, I suppose, on the outside of the ring. I could have sworn the reason they became a team was the fact that Bryan was going to learn off of Drew and not the other way around, which is now the case. So to me, this is just stupid. Corbin had some nice success showing off his boxing ability and some heavy strikes before Gulak counters sending the King outside in a heap over the announce table. However, this simply lasted an advertisement break, and then when the show returned, Baron Corbin was back on top. As I say most weeks, I love Corbin's heel style and his in-ring moveset is exceptionally good for a big man. He's very quick, he's very agile. I love the deep six and also the end of days. Both for me are very, very like spectacular moves, and also the pain level is something that to me looks believable, which makes them a great pre-finisher or finisher moves respectively. Gulak did show his counter reversal style in some parts of the match, but it wasn't overly prevalent, and this match ultimately finished because Cesaro and Shinsuke attacked Daniel Bryan outside the ring and this distracted Gulak so Corbin could hit the end of days for the win. For me, the outcome of the match was inevitable, a Corbin win, and I'm also very glad that he is actually in the Money in the Bank match, as he is one of my favourite stars. If you asked me this back in March, when Gulak and Bryan first got together and Gulak looked like he was going to get this big push, then I would have pushed Gulak massively and booked him in ways that I have previously mentioned in my other episodes and had him in the Money in the Bank ladder match, because I actually was that impressed with his performance at Elimination Chamber. I thought he was going to go into massive things. I don't see the relevancy of having Bryan in there in the match either, the Money in the Bank ladder match, and for them to carry on the Cesaro and Shinsuke feud with Bryan and Gulak, it just shows the lack of forward booking for all four superstars, which we will see how it plays out for the two heels, because of when the leader and the Intercontinental Champion Sami Zayn returns for obviously Cesaro and Shinsuke. But for me, out of the confirmed contestants in the Money in the Bank ladder match, I would love Corbin to win the briefcase for the second time and have a more of a successful cash-in, because I think he would make a great, great heel champion. And for me, he's ready for a shot at the main event picture, especially with the aid of someone like Wyatt, which basically would control the majority of the build-up in any type of storyline if he was a champion and they were booked together to have some sort of run. However, I do like what they were doing with Strowman and Wyatt. Obviously, it's very new, but I still think it could be a very, very good storyline. So any cash-in for Corbin, if he did win the Money in the Bank briefcase, would be a lot later down the line, which could actually suit him down to a T anyway, because hopefully for me, as you've heard on probably my previous episodes, I love the Elias feud and I hope that feud can continue in the meantime, if even with the rumoured injuries or when Elias returns, if the rumoured injuries are true. And of course, if a cash-in was later down the line, I just like the whole unpredictability of the briefcase. Some stars have obviously cashed in very quickly. I didn't like when they done the whole Braun Strowman cash in where it was announced. That isn't what the Money in the Bank briefcase is. I think some of the cash ins, a bit like Seth Rollins, it's a perfect one at WrestleMania. That's a huge one. I like the ones when the champion are injured down on the ground, obviously, or down on the mat, and then here comes the cash in. It's unpredictable. That's what it is. I don't particularly like the ones that cash in later on in the night or very, very early on. I think it should last a few months anyway. So even if Corbin won or whoever won, I would prefer a later cash-in in the year or even going into next year. So next up was Sheamus in yet another squash match against Daniel Vido, which again looked the part, very much like the opponent from last week. Vido, although, just got battered the whole time. As he's actually from the Performance Center, which was announced by Michael Cole, I wonder if we will see him in the future in NXT to begin with, as we often see future superstars technically their debut in a squash match, which at the time we are none the wiser that that will happen in the future. So if you think that people, a lot of stars, their debut would either be in NXT nowadays anyway, and then their debut into the main roster would be sometimes a squash match or sometimes just a random maybe open challenge or something like that, or brought up from NXT. It's a bit different now because some debuts we already know or have heard of the stars because of NXT, where back in the day you wouldn't necessarily know them. It would be a pure debut. But also when you look back in the future, they probably have actually been on the main roster in some sort of squash match, just probably under a different name, or obviously not in the same ring gear, because that would change, their character would grow, their personality would come out. So we do tend to see these people again, and it will be interesting to see, because he does genuinely look the part. And the fact they mention that he's in the Performance Center, it wouldn't surprise me if we do see him in years to come, or however long it would take him to get there. It was an extremely short match, and again, some afters with Michael Cole after the match before the tag team match, but I'll obviously speak about that after this little review. I would have assumed Sheamus to have a big part to play at Money in the Bank, but that doesn't seem to be the case, with 5 out of the 6 stars confirmed, and not a particularly huge lineup in terms of names, in my opinion, hence my hand favours Corbin at the moment, just because I don't think Aleister Black is quite ready for a main event push just yet. A United States Championship or an Intercontinental Championship run would suit him better for me at the moment, depending on his push and exposure. Now obviously he is on Raw and Intercontinental Championship is on SmackDown, but you know, the sort of like mid-card titles. I think he is ready in terms of character. I think he's ready in terms of moveset and his in-ring ability. I even quite like him on the mic. I just can't see how him winning the Money in the Bank briefcase, I think it would elevate him too far. I think that he just needs to have some matches that get him there slowly, because I don't want to risk his sort of like development by putting a briefcase on him. And they've already said that it'll be for the, obviously the main titles, obviously you'd go for it. Well, I'm sure it used to be. Now, again, if I'm wrong, but I'm sure it just used to be. You'd be able to pick whatever title you wanted. That was what Money in the Bank was. Now, of course, you're going to pick either the Universal title or the WWE title now. But I'm sure they never used to actually say that, but I suppose that's besides the point, because every cash-in has normally been for the main title. But anyway, for Aleister Black to win the briefcase, I just think it would be a little bit too far in elevation from where he is at the moment. But we'll have to see. Although the other entrants to the match are rumoured to be Elias, Jeff Hardy, Sheamus, Kevin Owens, and even Jinder Mahal, and obviously there's so many names floating about, and even some of the actual confirmed entrants of the match are rumoured to either get injured or sort of pulled from the cards to make way for one of these. So maybe one walks to the ring and Jinder Mahal comes out and basically beats him up, which in turn, as we know, WWE will go, yeah, now you're in there. A bit like what we've seen in Royal Rumble in the past and stuff like that. Obviously these are all rumours. I haven't seen any information to back any of it up, so it is all speculation at the moment. Either way, all these stars that I've just mentioned from the rumours need some relevancy and storylines in their respective rosters, and I think the briefcase would add that to one of them or whoever the winner would be. So obviously Corbin has that feud with Elias, but Sheamus hasn't got anything, Jinder Mahal obviously hasn't come back yet, Jeff Hardy needs a storyline with his return, Kevin Owens now needs a new storyline. So I think what I said earlier that I'd like Corbin to win, I think that's based on what the current match looks like. I think if Kevin Owens was to be put in there, or Jeff Hardy was to be put in there, or even Sheamus, I think I wouldn't mind either way any of them ones winning, but I don't need Apollo Crews winning or Rey Mysterio winning. I just don't think that'd be good for the briefcase. So next up was tag team action. So The Miz and Morrison against the Lucha House Party, with Dorado and The Miz starting in the ring. Lucha House Party for me are stars that are great at selling moves. Basically being the ragdolls that are thrown around and doing insane flips and tricks, but are never really going to win anything substantial, just because of the star stature in the roster. Metalik is extremely fun to watch. His rope work is very different to other Lucha high flying styles we have seen over the years. Like in every Lucha House Party match, they have some success, albeit very limited, and Miz and Morrison have very effectively and fairly easily controlled the match with frequent tags, chopping and changing who had their turn providing the beatdowns. I think the fact that Morrison is a bigger physical high flyer, it sort of takes the effect of Lucha House Party away, as he can do most, if not all, of their moves, whereas against The Miz, obviously having that one high flyer versus a technical wrestler is good to watch, and it adds that sort of competition. The finish came out of nowhere, where Metalik got the quick pin over The Miz from a reversal before quickly retreating with Dorado up the ramp, leaving Miz and Morrison in disbelief. I think it's clear that the tag team storylines will need some variety now, and the Luchas and Forgotten Sons will add that all needed fresh look and fresh outcome, although I can't see Luchas having a real shot at the titles, or at least a successful shot. And I think it's very likely that they will fade away again, as we have seen plenty of times since they became a tag team, which is a bit of a shame, because I think with a little bit more mic work, which we saw early in the show, and a little bit more exposure to big matches may change that, of course. So we will see how WWE book them in the near future. But I think just from watching WWE for the amount of years I have, they do repeat themselves. You can learn a lot from history. If you've watched WWE long enough, you sort of get the idea of how things are going to play out. I think Lucha House Party are simply only sort of like space fillers while WWE may think of storylines, or once they get a full feud going. And unfortunately, I don't think they're going to be the ones to fit that role. I think they're going to push the Forgotten Sons. The Miz and Morrison are obviously going to stay up there. The New Day and the Usos are obviously mainstay tag teams for the foreseeable and probably forever. So unfortunately, unless something drastic happens, I can't see the Lucha House Party really being too successful. So next up was the females. Sasha accompanied by Bayley. She was against Lacey Evans in a qualifying match for the Women's Money in the Bank match. I loved Sasha's entrance, holding a little picture on a stick of Lacey's daughter. For me, I love the personal aspect of things when they include them in certain storylines, as it makes the feud and the hatred feel that much more real, and it's more realistic. Bayley immediately distracts Lacey with the picture of her daughter, leading to Sasha getting the upper hand, and then the same thing happens seconds later on the outside, again with Bayley distracting Lacey and allowing Sasha to again get the upper hand. Sasha and Lacey worked extremely well in this match, and I loved Lacey's more aggressive approach to it, which also highlighted the hate between the two. Sasha targeted Lacey's right hand, which would eliminate the woman's right finishing move, and hit a lovely double knees from the top rope. Lacey reversed Sasha's onslaught for a moment, not really too long, where she continued the aggression. When she smashed Sasha's head into the ring post multiple times, which I love this type of thing to happen for Lacey, as it would usually be Sasha and Bayley getting the upper hand on stars like Lacey or Naomi, which we've seen time and time again. So having Lacey have the success on the aggressive side and using the ring post and getting really, really like into it and invested into the hatred, it allowed the viewers, me, the fans, to get involved, invested into the feud and really feel that hatred. And also the aggressive side was something we hadn't seen. So the finish was incredibly well thought of and booked by creative or whoever came up with it. Where Lacey managed to hit the woman's right on Sasha, leading to a pin, but Bayley, being the typical heel, as we've seen time and time again, pulls Sasha's leg onto the bottom rope to stop the pin. This led to a roll-up by Sasha on Lacey. However, Bayley and the ref were arguing over her involvement in stopping the first pin, meaning the count never started for Sasha's roll-up. Now Lacey kicks out and hits yet another woman's right on Sasha after eliminating Bayley from the ring apron, leading to a pinfall victory and successfully booking her place in the Money in the Bank match. Now, for me, this added another level to Lacey's character, as they had previously tried the whole vulnerability angle with some staged crocodile tears, which I personally liked, but the majority of the fans didn't. So the aggressive side not only shows the hatred in this current feud, as I've mentioned before, between Lacey and the so-called best friends in Sasha and Bayley, but it also adds that element to Lacey's character that we hadn't seen before, a bit like when Otis lost his head and attacked Miz and Morrison. It was just that aggressive side of Lacey that we hadn't really seen since sort of a babyface turn, because when she first debuted, she was more of a heel character. And then they tried that vulnerable angle, which didn't really work too well, and it didn't last too long. I did actually see Sasha winning the Money in the Bank after reading and actually agreeing with some of the rumours and predictions, but this may be wrong now, as she's not officially in the match. However, I'm staying optimistic with how the Bayley-Sasha thing ends, as I've been very impressed with it so far. And the fact that Sasha may think Bayley cost her place in the Money in the Bank match, because she basically stopped the pin, because she was arguing with the ref, it just again continues to build the inevitable split between them quite nicely. Now, I must say, without a doubt, the women's Money in the Bank match is a much stronger booking of superstars than the men. The overall variety and stature of all the stars, from Nia Jax to Shayna Baszler to now Lacey Evans to Asuka, is a lot stronger than Apollo Crews, Rey Mysterio, Baron Corbin, like Aleister Black. I mean, they're don't get me wrong, they're big stars, but they're very mid-card stars, where for me, the women's match is just a little bit more impressive. Whether that will be the case when it's actually like in reality, but on paper, definitely stronger. So the women's tag team title match with Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross defending against Dana Brooke and Carmella. I was actually a lot more pleased with the entrance from the champions, as Nikki was not doing the stupid, silly type stuff, and it was just more enjoyable to watch, in my opinion. And it suited both stars more, which also brings them closer, as you don't get them sort of like undermining looks from Alexa towards Nikki, where she's being silly, because Alexa doesn't act silly, does she, at all? She's just sort of like classy. The match started in the ring, but pretty much straight away we had action on the outside, with two cross bodies from Carmella and Dana on Bliss and Cross respectively. Carmella had some good success against Bliss, which was a bit of a reminder to her woman's title run, in a way, to basically what she can do in the ring, which was quite nice actually, because she hasn't really been booked too well since then, really. Nikki got the tag without Carmella knowing, and this changed the match, which allowed the champions to get on top before a very, very nicely performed modified 3D for the win. Now, I loved this finishing move, and I'm sure this will be a mainstay in the moveset of the tag champs, and it is one that is very much needed. And as you all probably know by now, I love the tag teams that have the specific tag team move involving both stars. It looked good. It looked effective and was performed so well. So it's a big thumbs up from me to whoever gave them this move. I just hope they get another meaningful feud, which is going to be hard considering the lack of women's tag teams in the division, unless WWE do what they normally do in this situation and put two irrelevant stars together. I just hope Carmella and Dana isn't that tag team moving forward. The end of the show came with Triple H coming out for his 25th anniversary celebration. Now, I'm not sure what happened with the water situation for his entrance, but he was visibly frustrated. For some reason, some cameraman or production crew took the water off of him, for whatever reason. Then HBK Shawn Michaels interrupts the beginning of the promo, which is a bit annoying, because I do find Shawn a tad overbearing in recent years, when I would just rather Triple H say what he wants to say. Shawn talks about their friendship and thanks Hunter for over the years. Shawn just keeps interrupting the game with every sentence, which, whether it was planned or not, it just frustrated me so much and just brings back my point of him just being overbearing. DX comes into the topic of the conversation with some highlights of the good old days from the Attitude Era. Shawn starts praising Hunter's accomplishments, with him being a 14-time champion, and clips of his WrestleMania matches. However, this was actually showing clips of his losses at the Show of Shows. So Shawn mentions a hiccup in Triple H's career when he met Stephanie McMahon, and the game then gets a FaceTime from his wife, with Shawn mocking Stephanie in the background. Michaels then mentions Evolution and Ric Flair, FaceTimes Triple H, but this time Rick was congratulating him on his career. So Road Dogg Jesse James FaceTimes Triple H, with Shawn again interrupting it. Vince McMahon then entered the fold with his views on the anniversary, and even Sean had to sort of introduce Vince, which Vince did not like one bit. He didn't like the fact that Sean had to sort of like introduce him. Everyone knows who Vince McMahon is. Triple H, it's his bloody son-in-law. Why does Sean need to say anything? He just take the mic off of him so he can't say anything. It just really frustrates me. Vince leads on to say that the crowd would be chanting boring, boring, and basically comparing him to very poor segments from over the years. And some, it was actually quite light-hearted humour, which was quite nice to see from like the in-laws, that sort of like relationship, because I imagine that's actually a true life relationship with a bit of banter, a bit of like light-hearted digs that probably both of them do. For me, the Vince part was nice. The Shawn Michaels part was just absolutely pointless, and it just ruined the whole thing. Triple H talking about his memories and his career with clips and videos, then leading on to about like NXT, his little baby in WWE. Not an actual baby, like NXT is like his baby, his creation. The Performance Center, Stephanie and Vince, etc. And then basically when he mentions the fact that he's with Stephanie and Vince, and then I would have Vince coming out for his part, would have been a much better way to end the show without Shawn Michaels interrupting everything anyone says and ultimately trying to claim all the attention. I've never found him funny. And with age, he is just so infuriating to watch now. Every time he comes on, and whether it's this celebration, a DX reunion, or anything to do with NXT, it's every time he has a chance at the spotlight, he just snatches it away from anyone. I could literally ramble on about my dislike for Shawn Michaels for days on days. Now, I'm not saying I didn't love him as a superstar, because I did. He's without a doubt one of the best. But since his retirement, I just think he's obnoxious, he's arrogant, and arrogant in a very bad way. And even stories and interviews and videos of how he treats the younger stars backstage without any respect whatsoever, he's just a rude old man. But I'll leave it there. Like, you'll be able to find them online, social media and everything. The way he treats people backstage is just disgusting. Even there, look, it's like Triple H's 25th anniversary, and this part of the show where I review this segment, It's more about Shawn Michaels than anything else, simply because he got way too involved yet again. Personally, even my idea of just Triple H celebrating, then a finish with Vince McMahon, doesn't really seem too traditional, like in WWE terms, in the way where an interruption from a heel, either from SmackDown or NXT, leading to a pedigree from Triple H to finish would have been normally the typical thing. There was a lot of love for this on social media, but personally I did not like this segment. It was scripted and Michaels just ruined it from the moment he came out. I did actually think that Michaels was going to turn on Triple H for a moment when he kept interrupting him, because I could see sort of like not too much annoyance, but you could tell that Triple H was a little bit annoyed at the fact he kept being interrupted and the fact that Vince was as well. I did think there was probably a super kick coming, and even Ric Flair mentioned it. But then again, I did think that neither one of them are current stars. WrestleMania isn't round the corner, so they can't really do a match. Then I did think maybe Saudi Arabia events coming up, but obviously COVID-19 would probably stop that. So I did think maybe if there's a Saudi event, that Shawn Michaels versus Triple H might be like a one-off match for them. But then again, I'm sure they've ended that contract because Saudi Arabia aren't showing WWE anymore. So I don't know if that means there won't be any shows, but I'm sure that pretty much is the same. A clever way would have been the hacker gimmick to interrupt one of the celebration clips some way, because this doesn't take away from the Triple H celebration. There would be no physical contact needed, and it just added it would just add relevancy to the ongoing like who is the hacker thing. It would only have to be for a minute. It could literally be SmackDown in the middle of the sort of like clips from maybe like WrestleMania or DX or NXT or whatever. The hacker thing comes on. Triple H is visibly confused at who that was and sort of goes, right, anyway, we'll carry on. And then it would just add that thing as no one is safe. That's what I would have liked about it. The typical heel thing coming out and going, oh, you're not that good, pretty much the perfect candidate would have been Baron Corbin. He does that very well. Come out, you're not very good, your career's rubbish, blah, 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 pedigree, end. That would be the typical thing. But having a little bit of a hacker segment where it comes in, the truth will be heard, bang, goes again. Triple H, like, what was that? Everyone, what was that? Looks at all the producers, looks at all the crew. Okay, right, we'll carry on. And then they have a nice little celebration, a little bit of a send-off to end the show. That would have been a much better way for me. But for this segment, for the actual one that happened, it was a terrible way to end what was a very solid show on all accounts. And I just thought it was a complete cop-out of what the Triple H 25th anniversary should have been. But anyway, moving on to next week, we've got Otis versus Dolph Ziggler and Mandy Rose versus Carmella for the final Money in the Bank ladder match places in the men's and the women's. I can't wait to see how the Money in the Bank matches plays out due to the way it is being very cleverly set up with the seven floors of the WWE headquarters at Titan Towers and even the roof being used. I mean, as I touched on it earlier, the leaked photos of the first look of the ladders and the ring on the roof looks incredible. And after the behind-the-scenes cinematic-type matches of Edge and Orton, Boneyard match and Firefly Funhouse matches at WrestleMania, I'm sure this behind-closed-doors event will be another spectacle for the ages, with another interesting outlook on the traditional match, because obviously the amount of floors, the amount of rooms they're going to go in, pretty similar to what Randy Orton and Edge did going through the performance center using the gym and the offices. I think it's interesting. It will be exciting. It's a very clever way of making the Money in the Bank match even more exciting, because obviously there's no fans, and I think WWE are being very creative and using a lot of variety and different ideas to obviously counteract this whole situation with COVID-19, being it behind closed doors. So anyway, guys, thank you so much for listening, especially in this current time, and taking some time out of your day to listen to me. And please support me. Give me a follow on my Twitter, at AidWrestle, AIDWrestle. And as I said, we'll continue with the conversations, continue with the dates. I'll update it regularly with news, some rumours, squash some rumours. Some behind the scenes sort of news and information. So I'll be back next week with another SmackDown review. Thanks for listening, guys. See you later.
You think you know me?
For listening to the WWE podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to wwepodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/wwepodcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.